fascinating. Gadgets, gizmos, and gear-based technologies.
Welcome to FGGBT. Now, this is the show that takes your favorite fictional science and technology, and we make it a reality. We are the Brain Trust. I am the analytical mastermind, Daniel J. Glenn. With me, the physics phenom, Dr. Michael Dennett.
Dan, it is so awesome to be here, except for the fact, I just have to say, Dan, you finally made me feel old, because I was pretty sure I read this book and I either completely forgot it or never read it. So either way, the brain is not working.
That was a weird moment, Dan, and I'm not going to lie. I thought you were going to be my compatriot, my comrade, when discussing both the book and this TV show that we're going to discuss, but I couldn't tell if it was a senior moment or a complete deletion of your memory, Dan. Tough call. But there's one person that I never want deleted from my memory, and that is our enigmatic engineer, Ben Siebser. Ben, do you remember that you are living up there on the brain station?
Yeah, Dan, and I had a very strange experience this week. I went into one of the storage compartments, but I found myself in an old Apollo capsule up in space. I immediately backed up and luckily found myself back here on the brain station. But I'm worried. What do you think happened, Dan?
Well, that's a close call. I think I know exactly what happened, Ben. And it's something we're going to talk about today. We're going to do something nice. You know me. I'm not a particularly nice person when it really comes down to it. But this is going to be an episode that was recommended by one of our super fans, Holly. It's her birthday. And normally I don't do this, but I decided to do something nice. She recommended this episode. And so happy birthday, Holly. Happy birthday. And I hope we do a good job here, because this is one of my favorite stories. It's a Stephen King story. Denon, we alluded earlier, you're a Stephen King fan. You claim to have read this book, yet when we discussed it, you completely forgot it. I think this might be my favorite Stephen King story of all time, and it's not a horror story. It's a science fiction story. So I don't know. I don't even know what to say there, Denny, because I don't know if you've read it. I'm assuming you know about this story at this point.
Oh, I do. I have a couple of theories, okay. Dan. I think someone from the future has come back through a closet and taken the book away from me and has just done this to embarrass me on the show. Hmm. I think we have a fan out there who's kind of an anti-fan who is just messing with my memory, Dan. And time tried to fight back, which is why earlier I was able to say with confidence I read it, and now I can't.
That's true. I don't see any holes in that theory, which is what's interesting to me. So this is a story about a guy who finds. Well, he's told about a portal in this old diner that takes him back to a very specific time. Takes him back to 1958 in the book, 1960 in the TV series of the same name. It's called 11-22-63. And this is really interesting because we've done a lot of time travel stuff, but this one seems really interesting. It's about this guy is tasked with stopping the Kennedy assassination. And so most of the book describes how he meets Oswald and all the players in that game. But, you know, one of the things that I thought was very interesting about this is that this particular event is a marquee event in baby boomer history. And in the story, a baby boomer enlists the help of a Gen X person to go back and stop and go back to the 50s and do all this. I think more than ever, these generations, which I've always thought about, but I've never really considered as being all that important except for some personality traits. I think it comes through here, guys. And we sort of span three generations if we really push it. So I feel like we're going to have three different perspectives on this. Denon, how do you feel about this being, you and I are both straddling lines here.
We are. Now, it could be just like having forgotten the book, Dan. Maybe I forgot when I was born and I'm solidly a baby boomer. I don't know.
I mean, you don't feel like baby boomer, but yeah.
Well, I am on the edge. I am on the edge. And we know I'm always on the edge. I'm kind of that like very calm, mellow, edgy guy. I defy mellow edginess.
Mellow edgy. Mellow edginess.
And that's just, you know, probably because I'm on the edge of these two generations. But yeah, no, I'll be curious to see our different reactions to it and how we care about changing the events or whether the events matter.
Yeah, I mean, as the millennial representative here, although to be fair, an old millennial, you know, I just saw this movie as once again the boomers trying to boss us around and make us do their own dirty work. But, you know, yeah, every once in a while they might be right. You know, maybe there are things that, that should be fixed in the past.
It's possible. You know, and I saw a lot of parallels with Back to the Future, which I'm going to sprinkle in here. And for sure, Baby Boomer's pushing around a Gen X guy in that one. But I'll try to sneak in those as I get them. But, you know, one of the things that but we have to talk about first, and I don't think we've really discussed, is if you're going to have someone go into the past and change an event. So in particular, you know, the main character's name is Jake. Jake goes back to 1958 or 1960, goes back to that point, and he has to wait until 1963, you know, November of 1963. So he has to live in the 50s/60s for 5 years or so, planning, operating, living his life. And I think fitting in that time period, being someone from 2011 is when, you know, in the book, going back to the 50s, I think you can fit in, but the social times are different. Money's different. Clothes are different. Attitudes are different. Language is different. Even in a short period of time, fitting in becomes hard to do, but crucial to your success, guys.
It does. And, you know, Dan, one of the things that really strikes me in this, I want to start with the last thing you said, clothing, just briefly. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, it struck me, when he's first, the scene where in the first episode, he has to go buy his suit, right? He's told men wear a suit most of the time and he's in kind of a jacket, a t-shirt and such. You know, it was weird how on one hand, the clothing wasn't that weird between the 50s and now, right? Yes, men are wearing suits, but it's not like you're going back to the 1600s or something where it's a radically different look.
And a lot of people wear retro, in fairness. I wear a lot of 70s shirts. I'd fit in perfect in a disco in 76.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the t-shirt was kind of the funny thing that stood out to me, right? To think about how we've gone with t-shirts. But then the other thing I noticed, in many of the rest of the episodes, he's not actually wearing a suit, mm-hmm. right? He's just wearing, and other people are, like, it's weird. Like, yeah, men wear suits, but the 50s are kind of like where you start to see not suits too. So, I feel like in your other podcast, you know, you've had some very interesting episodes on clothing. So the clothing part to this is really interesting. Like, I learned about proper wearing a tie and, you know, why your collar was not attached from you, Dan. Attached to your shirt. Sorry.
Yes, that's right. If attached to me, that'd be a very different story. That would be much more painful. And, you know, working for your fashion for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, so clothing is really interesting.
Yeah. I was wondering about it because you see him. It seems to me like he consciously chooses to ditch the suit. And I do wonder, though, if that's because he feels like suits are for proper good people and you shouldn't show up in a fancy suit to the mob bar because you'd be out of place and they'd treat you as a mark more so or something along those lines.
It's interesting because clothes do tell a lot about you. I mean, the t-shirt was considered like underwear.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, James Dean was wearing it in the 50s, but he was a rebel. Yeah. He was on the cutting edge of fashion. So to show up in like graphic tees, I mean, it'd be like showing up in your, you know, tidy whiteys, graphic tidy whiteys.
Did they even have graphic tees back then?
I don't think so. They just had white t-shirts.
Tees.
That's
And graphic tidy whiteys are called underoos, Dan, and they come later.
they're not a sponsor of the show. I didn't want a name drop there.
Oh, gotcha.
Marketing for them. Yeah. Yeah.
That's more of a 70s thing.
Yes, I have worn my share of underoos. I don't now, and I wouldn't show up in the past in just underoos, Dennett, is my point here. But fitting in is hard, you know, whether you're just wearing your underwear or a nice suit. And the other thing here, guys, and this is something that we really have to think about, right? Especially you millennial generation and all your social justice crap. When you go back in time, if you ignore the social forces that are happening, you're going to have a problem. Right. We see in this. So Jake goes and gets a job at a school. The secretary who runs the office happens to be black. Now, no, in 2011, not a problem. 1958, something to consider. Right. So there's one moment where she's refused gasoline at a gas station. And Jake stands up for her, gets her gas. And we all have a big cheer moment. We're like, yeah, we're all rooting for her. However, this might be one of the dumbest things that he does because it's a problem. This is, you're going against the social forces. This could be life-threatening. Your job is to fit in. You don't want to put a target on your back because you're trying to go and stop an assassination of a president. So this feels like one of the first in a series of dumb moves that Jake does, when he should really live by the adage, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Not when in Rome, do as what you would do in 2011 if you time-traveled back to Roman times and wanted to take out the emperor.
This is an interesting thing, Dan, because are you holding up your moral code or are you holding up your mission, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it's coming down to. And I think I do agree. I want to say one other thing, though. Jake does make a series of stupid decisions that jeopardize his mission. If nothing else, you were right that this was one of many.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the very least, if you're going to stick to your morals, which I do commend him for, you know, do it in a sneaky way, you know.
Right.
Come back later with the, you know, say, oh, I'll get you the gas later. Don't worry about it. You know, don't.
Exactly.
Don't make a scene, at least.
Yeah. If you're going to do, if your moral compass, because the social forces will work like a magnet and flip your moral compass around like you've got an alien spaceship over your head. Right. you're going to have a problem. But you can. That's a perfect example, Ben. Just do these things subtly. Do them quietly. You know, you don't want to arouse suspicion in the population, because it could be life threatening. You know, you mentioned the mob. This is another thing here. How, if you're going back in time and you need to fit in, you got to spend that cash, man. It's America, baby. Money's still king, even in the 1950s. But you're coming from 2011. You can't bring these crazy Monopoly money looking $100 bills and $20 bills from now and bring them back to the 50s. You got to get 1950s money. How do you do that? Well, there's a couple ways. The dumbest of which is what happens here, where let's go bet on... bet on sporting events. We already know the outcome with mob bosses who are the only people running the bookies. It's the gray sports almanac. You know, we saw what happened with Biff in Back to the Future. I don't know if this is the smartest thing in the world, but it is a way to get easy money in the 50s.
You know, Dan, I think it comes down to execution to some degree, right? Okay. I was thinking about, right, you could like purchase stock or do things like that, but that just takes too long, right? You don't get your cash right away. And you know, you could try and figure out some cool properties to flip. Again, doesn't happen fast. I think what you have to do is do clever mob betting, right? Not win too much from one mobster at the same time. I think that's kind of the key here, which goes to what Ben said earlier, you know, about if you're not going to have your moral compass be your mission, you have to do your moral compass sneakily. You have to do your betting in a sort of sneaky and creative way.
Yeah, like not taking 36-1 bets or 35-1 or whatever it was. Take the 1.5-1 bet or the half to, or whatever it is. You know, win $50 with your $100 and don't arouse the suspicion, you know.
Well, that, it becomes tricky because this is his way of getting money, especially money early on, because you need a nest egg. You mentioned getting property and flipping it. Well, Denon, you can't go in. He just appears out of nowhere. He's not going to get a loan. Yeah. You got to have some nest egg. You got to start somewhere. Maybe you can, you know, in 2011, maybe you can scrape together some old dollar bills. You know, maybe you've got, I once found when my grandmother passed away, I went through her clothes, my grandfather as well. Went to one of their jackets and there was a $50 bill in there. Actually, I'm telling the story all wrong. I remember exactly what happened. As my grandfather passed away, I went to go put on one of his suit jackets, reached in the pocket, found $50, and I was 12 years old. I showed it to my grandma and I was like, look, I found 50 bucks. And she's like, that's my money, and snatched it out of my hand. And I was like, all right, there you go. But that money could have been from whenever. I don't know the last time you wore that suit.
Yeah.
So you can find these little nuggets, but getting a bunch, that's the problem. And this is basically his job when he first gets there. Yeah.
No, it is. And it's really hard to do. But I think, Dan, you also have to realize if you found that lucky $50, you're now super rich back then.
True.
Is that worth like $1 million in $1950? I don't know.
I can't quite do the math that fast, but it's worth a lot.
I don't know about a million, but it's definitely like hundreds of meals at the soda shop he goes to or whatever.
That's true. But you're right. Moderation's key here, Ben.
Yeah.
You know, Biff Tannen taught us that completely. You have to do this in a way that doesn't arouse suspicion, doesn't get you killed, but also gives you enough money to live on and continue your research, I guess, or investigation.
I mean, and you know, it might get you in trouble with the mob, but maybe be your own bookie and only take the bets you know are going to win.
I don't know if that's how it works, but that's not a bad plan. I don't think turn away books. Yeah.
I am a little worried, you know, your pocket story, which clearly, again, people were messing with. See, that's why you had to tell it twice. This is, you know, foreshadowing something to come. But I do think the danger, like, well, first of all, it's not a danger for me. I don't carry cash anymore. I don't carry change. And that's really an important safety tip as a time traveler, because the last thing you want to do is show up in the past, you know, be spending money, get a bunch of change, and then you go, you know, pay your 25 cents for your coffee and you're throwing out a 2008 state quarter.
Right.
And they're looking at it and they're going, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, right.
You mentioned Monopoly money. I'm not so worried about the $100 bills. I'm worried about the state quarters I collected.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about going back, it's a lot easier to find old change that wouldn't arouse suspicion at last. I don't know how you're finding like a 1958 $50, $20 bill here in the show in 2011. Like, bills only last in circulation a few years at most, but you can definitely find some old coins to bring back. And you know, if you bring back $20 in quarters, you can do pretty well for yourself.
I think you could buy a house and a car left over with a meal, if I understand the exchange rate correctly.
I mean, I think you can buy all of Florida.
It depends on how far back we're going. Actually, I think Manhattan was a scam for a couple beads. So we're staying in the 50s. We're not going all the way back to the founding of the country. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's a famous time travel movie. I won't spoil it, but that's exactly how things go awry. There's a modern coin brought into the past. So can unravel quickly, Denon, you're talking about. And, you know, I think what else can make your plan unravel very quickly is being in the 50s and setting down roots. You're there for 5 years, guys. You're going to make friends. You may fall in love. You know, he ends up getting a job as a teacher, which is much smarter than scamming the mob.
Yeah.
And, you know, things happen, you know, and you get caught up in the situation. And that, to me, I think is another mistake that happens here is if you want to do this correctly, you got to be a hermit. You can't really interact with people outside of what you need to do, because the goal is to go back in 5 years. The goal is not to stay in the 50s. And I think this is the human condition wants to make connections to people. But this might be his biggest mistake, I think, is falling in love and setting down roots here, Denon.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is one that's a mistake from a different direction. Your mission is two parts. It is to, in this case, you know, stop the assassination of Kennedy. And you said, and get back. Well, you know, that may not be your mission. You know, we recently did an interesting episode, you know, right where people are choosing between quantum futures. He just got divorced. I mean, maybe he's not so happy with his life, Dan. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, stop the assassination and stay if you found a better life. Why go back at that point? So I'm not as convinced that that's as bad as the others. The others, like getting caught with money, you can be put in jail. You know, being too much of an activist, you can be put in jail. Maybe for a good cause, but now you don't get to achieve your mission. Putting down roots, not as much necessarily. So I think it's in a different category. Though I like the danger warnings you're bringing with it.
Yeah. I mean, the only issue with staying is you don't know if you actually improved the situation. But, you know, maybe you don't care. Maybe you're just going to keep going. And if you see things going south, maybe then you decide to go back and try again.
as an escape route. I couldn't disagree with you more, Denon. I mean, I think that laying down roots might be the worst decision you could make. Falling in love could be the worst decision you make. You lose focus. There's nothing that makes a man lose focus more than a woman. And you got to cut him out of your life if you've got this mission. I'm not saying cut him out of your life in your regular world, right? I mean, come on, I'm still a human being. I'm a red-blooded American, for God's sakes. But if you're going back in time, you got a mission. Stay focused. You got to eyes on the prize type of thing here, Denon. This is something that's just going to get in the way. And as we see, I've one other part to this, but you know what you got to do. Stay on the goal and don't let anything get in the way of stopping that goal.
Well, you are very goal focused, Dan.
I am.
Yeah. Well, and you also do have to worry about other collateral damage. Like if you're going back to change one specific thing, you know, if you date somebody, you know, who knows who they would have dated if you weren't there. And who knows what kid they would have had or whatever. You know, there's all these follow-on butterfly effects for every intervention you make. And so if you want to be scientific about it, you need to make exactly one intervention. Otherwise, how do you know what you did worked?
Interesting. That is a good point. Dan, I hate to do this to you, but I'm forced to make a Back to the Future reference.
Please do.
I will agree you don't want to go back and date your mom.
I think we can all agree on that, Denon. I think that's something we can all get behind and finally come together as one unit. That's true. And you don't want your mom to fall in love with you, which I remember watching Back to the Future, and I don't think I quite understood just how weird that was, mostly because I had a crush on Leah Thompson. But when you really start to break it down, the Oedipal storylines in that are bizarre, to say the least. So we'll agree on that.
There's a problem in general with traveling back to the before you were born, because if you go anywhere near what your birthplace or your parents, you could totally screw up how your existence and either become your own parent or just make your parents not meet. And it's something I also worry about with like the whole plot of the show is, how do you not know that major event is required for your birth to happen?
Right. Yeah. And this is really important, because, you know, you are, just by the fact that you're there, you are an agent of change. You have, for lack of a better term, some gravitational, some changeable force around you that alters everything you touch and come in contact with. And you want to keep that area of effect, as they say in video games, that area of effect that you have, as small as possible. You know, when in Back to the Future, it's that moment where his moral compass comes in and he doesn't want to see his dad get beat up. So he tries to intervene again, you know, sticking his nose where it doesn't belong. And what happens? He throws off. I mean, those events create a fantastic movie. But if we were talking about that in real life, that upends his entire life from that point forward. He gets hit by the car. Mom falls in love with him. Then he has to spend the rest of the movie trying to undo that damage. Let's just cut out that stuff. Let's have a nice, calm, non-cinematic experience in the past where we don't alter too much stuff and get in, get out, bada bing, bada boom, go back to your life, you know?
Yeah, Dan, you're always the optimist on the show, clearly.
I'm a realist. You listen to me, I'll get you through the event.
No, Dan, I think in this case you're being optimistic. The idea of, particularly since you gave yourself 3 years, let's just hang out for 3 years and affect nothing except the event. Very, very optimistic, Dan. You're out of character, I think, but I can get behind that optimism. Yeah, just sit quietly and meditate. I don't know, join a commune before they exist.
Yeah, do something like that.
I mean,
that's the way to go.
But even join the commune is probably, I mean, even having, let's say you get a bunch of money in one trip and then go back on another one, you know, resetting the timeline, which is how the time travel works in this universe. Even just going to the store and buying food so you don't starve to death is a change, right? Like, what if you buy the can of peas, the last can of peas, and someone else doesn't get their peas and now they're mad about it and do something horrible? Like,
Right.
Well, that could be why Oswald shoots Kennedy, is he didn't get his can of peas.
Exactly.
And now you're the one who cost it.
Yeah, you know, maybe he gets angry because, you know, you bought the last of his favorite piece of food.
There are lots of conspiracy theories that actually revolve around Oswald and the famous can of peas that he didn't get. That's the same place he bought his magic bullet, I think.
Exactly.
If I understand it correctly. But let's not cut too far down that rabbit hole. But you do make a good point here, Ben, and that I forgot to mention one of the key elements is when Jake goes into this portal, he goes back to that same time period. He goes through it multiple times, the exact same point in time he arrives. If he makes a change, when he comes back, that change will have affected the entire timeline. So the first thing that he does, you know, changing the past is something key here. So the first time he goes in, he carves something on a tree, on a small little sapling, goes back through the portal, and then he realizes the tree is big and hit that signature, that carving still exists. When he goes back to the past, it resets everything, which is a good thing and a bad thing depending on what you've done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very much like a save point in a video game. I've often been in games where I've done a lot of good stuff, but maybe I forgot and I get killed and I lose some famous piece of armor or weapon or whatever, and I go back to the save point not realizing that I now have to do an hour's more of work to get back to that point, right? And that's kind of what happens here. There's a big video game here element.
You know, Dan, this is really exciting and I love the point. I think it would have been actually just a tad funnier if after carving his initials, that causes the tree to die, so he comes forward in time and the tree's just gone. That's so what I would have liked. But the reset button is fascinating to me. I think that's like a really cool feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, yeah, getting multiple tries at the same thing is great. You know, like you said, it's the save point. You know, he can in a way, he can do no wrong. Though I do wonder if he somehow causes his existence to end when he comes back. Should he just, like, I don't know, dust away like, you know, Thanos snapped as he comes back through the portal? Like, yeah, I do wonder about that one.
Well, I'm not sure that would happen, as we will get to in just a second. I think that might be an impossibility because this show does a great job of kind of eliminating that famous grandfather paradox. But before we get to that, I want to ask one other question here, because one of the things that we see, and this goes on, you know, with not laying down roots, Jake brings people in on his adventure, right? Like, he brings in confidants who help him with his mission to stop this assassination. Right. Now, this requires explaining why you know this information, that you're from the future. Here's what's going to happen. You know, you also can't affect things. Now you've created basically another agent of change who has knowledge they shouldn't have. And now they're going to be changing a bunch of things based on that knowledge. It's a ripple effect here, guys. And I don't want to be like Doc and be dramatic and say it can destroy the space-time continuum. But I think, Den, and you're making fun of me, but if you don't stay in that room, you don't meditate, you don't stay out of everyone's way, you're going to destroy the space-time continuum.
Well, you might, and you know what? Then we get to start over, Dan, and there's a lot of things. You've achieved your goal.
Simple, easy.
Very simple. But actually, I really like, you know, you triggered a thought here. You know, going back and finding compatriots. I think it's interesting to think about which time periods do you have any chance of convincing someone you're actually a time traveler versus just a scam artist.
Interesting. Okay. You know? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I feel like the 50s... after, you know, the atom bomb and everything, and was kind of this period of hope and belief in science doing anything, as well as fear of science doing anything. So, and science fiction was starting to become bigger. I mean, I know there's the golden ages of science fiction and comics that come and go, and the 50s is not the first, but there's an excitement there that I think the atom bomb was transformative, and I think this maybe opened up a little bit of a window where people would believe that.
Yeah, and I wanted to say something really quickly here. That it is, there was a big boom of science fiction, no pun intended, with the atomic bomb in the 50s that had a lot to do with exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was a space race, what radiation could do. And this is true. You know, I don't quite know how the schedule is going to work, but I'm going to do an interview with a guy who studied a TV show called Science Fiction Theater, which was one of the precursors to all of this. Television was coming happening right at that particular point. And a lot of science fiction television influenced The Twilight Zone and Outer Limits and these other things. So this was a big time. So you're not wrong. The advent of television, the atom bomb, science fiction, mass media, it's all coming together at this moment. So it's an interesting point, Denon.
Yeah. Perhaps this was just stupid, childish optimism. I remember even in my day growing up, thinking, well, we broke the sound barrier. Light speed can only be, you know, an engineer away, and certainly we'll have time travel but at some point. Now, Den, you may correct me that even in the 50s, they knew those things were impossible. But, you know, as a kid, I was like, you know, it's in Star Wars. Of course it can happen.
Exactly. No, and I don't think people, you know, were so... convinced or concerned. Yeah, no, it's in Star Trek, Star Wars, all over the place. But it is in Star Wars too, Ben. You are correct.
Well, the travel, the light travel, but not the time travel.
Yes.
And this is a great point, Denon, because how do you convince people that you have knowledge you shouldn't have? You know, we live in a world where there are lots of scam artists. You know, I know a couple. I know a couple people who can lie to me and that I know that they're lying and I still believe them. You know, that's how good some people can be, right? But I think, you know, we see some funny parts of this, you know, when you look at Back to the Future. You know, when Marty's trying to convince Doc that he's a time traveler, Doc says, okay, well, who's president in 1985? And he says, easy, Ronald Reagan. And he says, Ronald Reagan, the actor? And it's like, it's impossible to believe back then. Right. If you told someone in 2011 that Donald Trump was going to be president, Donald Trump, the reality star? Get out of here. You know, who's the vice president? You know, Jeff Probst, you know? It's like, these are things that even with the presidency, which is something that should be simple, and they wouldn't, it's not like Doc would know. You could say, you know, Bill Johnson. Or whatever generic name you want. It's not like Doc was going to know. But it's just funny because if you use real life examples, it's as you can be incredulous because you don't know where you don't know where history's going. You don't know where the future's going. Mm-hmm. And I think it does become difficult then. And some of these things get in your way to help you prove that you are in fact from the future. It's ridiculous. How do you explain the iPhone, Denon? Stuff like that.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up. And I've always thought it was hysterical. Like people do laugh, and the joke kind of is that he says Ronald Reagan, and Doc's like, how can you do it? But you alluded to Dan. I think the real joke is that anyone thought Doc asking a question about the future would prove you're from the future. Because Doc doesn't know it, right? Like,
yeah.
That's like the subtle behind the joke.
that's fair, but it is funny. Like, how do you prove it? Who do you bring in? You know, I don't think it's a good idea. Is what I can say, because I think it does change things, right? And that's really changing the past is really what's going on here. That's the crucial part of all of this. So we mentioned the tree. Jake tries these small little changes to see if it works. Basically, you know, he's kicking the tires on this time slip portal. But then there's also he tries to change some, you know, quasi minor events. You know, when he's, you know, in 2011. He's teaching people. He's helping them get their GED. There's a janitor who is a little mentally disabled. He was violently attacked when he was a kid, has brain damage because his father basically kills everyone in his family. He manages to survive, but, you know, not unscathed. And so he decides he's going to go and right this wrong and see what happens if he can save the family, right? And so he goes back in time. Saves, saves the family. And then that janitor goes off to Vietnam and ends up getting killed. So it's this law of unintended consequence. The path, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, there are all of these cliches that come together and really explain that when you change the future, we don't know what's going to happen. It's a wild card. We can make predictions. You guys are scientists, right? You make your best guess, then you test it. And I'm guessing, Denon, with all the science you've done, your hypothesis, they're blown out of the water. They're exploded like so many, neutralized like so many atoms inside a fission reaction.
Well, it is definitely true that I try very hard not to predict a future, Dan, because I have rarely been successful. And you're right. And experiments, actually, you know, this happens all the time. You decide to do something because you think you'll find X and you find Y. Like, you know, I this had a good event once. Like, you talked about bad outcomes. I'll just share briefly. Some undergrads want to do a research project. I'm like, oh, here's a fun one. I know what the answer is going to be. It'll be a cool summer project. You'll get it done. You get the answer. They got something completely different. And 2 years later, we had three papers from it. Wow. Nice. So that's I'm like, cool. Yeah. You know, so good things can happen too, Dan, when you don't predict the future correctly.
That is true. I guess I'm kind of stuck on the I'm the optimist, I guess. Then.
Yeah, you are the optimist coming out with the bad outcomes. I think we're using that correctly.
Though I have to say that this is more good evidence of the great science that Jake does here, because he goes back, he changes one, you know, seemingly somewhat minor thing, minor in the annals of history, at least.
Sure.
And he sees the result, and he doesn't really know how to handle that, because the family isn't murdered, but then the guy dies in Vietnam. You know, it's tough because both are tragedies in their own way.
Yeah, they are. Well, it's interesting because the original event, he survives dying. You change that event, he does die. Yeah. Instead of going on and living in 2011, it is strange because time becomes very time seems to have its own plan in this movie, for sure. Especially as we see him try even larger events. But, you know, the point of this movie is to stop the Kennedy assassination. And as we mentioned earlier, this is a pivotal moment in American history. It's a pivotal generational moment for baby boomers. And I think that it makes sense as Stephen King being a baby boomer would write a story about changing this pivotal event. But I think there are other pivotal events in history that this made me think, what would we change, right? Like, what if you could, you know, walk into your pantry, Ben, and end up in 1997, and so you've got 5 years to stop, 9/11, you know? How would you do that? What if this was 9/11/2001? That was the name of this book, right? And Ben Siepser is our main character, falls into his pantry and lands in the cool world of 1997, where snap bracelets are king and Kool-Aid is flowing from everyone's, you know, refrigerator, right? Like, how would you stop 9/11? Could you stop it? Is it possible to eliminate these forces that are guiding our history?
You know, there's the kind of seemingly obvious way, which is somehow, you know, the Jake approach, which is recruit a bunch of like bouncers and get them on the planes and stop the hijacking.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Possible, but, you know, how do you get people to believe you? Blah, blah, blah. That's hard. So the next thing is, how do you get the government to take the warnings they received about Osama bin Laden seriously? And, you know, I would argue George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, not so serious when it comes to believing intelligence. So we got to get Gore in office. We got to redo the 2000 election.
Okay.
And there's two ways to do that. One, you get rid of the Supreme Court, or change the Supreme Court in some way so that they decide to let the recount finish.
Hard to do as an average citizen.
Very hard to do as an average citizen. I don't know how you do that, because by 1997, I think that court's baked in. So the other solution is you go to West Palm Beach and get your way on the election board there and get rid of the butterfly ballots, because there's conclusive evidence. Well, maybe not conclusive evidence, but there's been a lot of very good research.
Speculation.
There's been a lot of very good research that the day of voting there for Pat Buchanan is completely out of line with both the absentee ballots for that region and the country as a whole, the state as a whole, everything. And if you take those excess Buchanan votes, which if the ballot was off by one would have been Gore votes, Gore would have won the state.
This is a really interesting path.
Fix the ballot.
And that's something here's what's great about that, is it's something you could do. You've got a couple years to do it. Yeah. You go to West Palm Beach, you find your way onto that, and you convince people to, because it's an archaic form of voting anyway.
You just demonstrate. You go, look, if you put this thing in wrong, it's not aligned. People will vote who they didn't mean to vote for. Now, maybe that's what the board wanted.
We don't know that, right?
We don't know that. But at the very least, you can easily demonstrate that this ballot is problematic and that you have 4 years to switch, or 3 years to switch it out, which I think is doable.
Yeah, and at that
I
time,
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's good too. And at that time, it's just going to look like you're fixing something, yeah, like mechanical. It's not election. You know, Ben, that was a much more elegant solution than I was thinking of. I was just figuring you believe people that cell phones should be turned off on flights or they get messed up. And instead of bouncers, I just go on the plane and leave my cell phone on. And then the flight would be messed up. But apparently that doesn't work nearly as well.
No.
That's 2001. I don't know if they still, I guess that was still a thing, wasn't it? Was that a thing?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. It's something to consider. I think I like this idea of stopping the election board. You know, I was kicking this around too, guys. And, you know, history's always been fascinating to me. I think that there are moments in history, you know, there are moments like Kennedy assassination, 9/11, which alter the course of history. But there's also, strangely, years where an abnormally amount of weird stuff or historic stuff happens, right? 2020 is a perfect example. COVID's not the only thing that was crazy. Murder hornets. I think there were kids eating Tide Pods. It was weird. 2020 was weird. I think we can all agree. 1969 is another one of these weird years, right? You know, you had the hippie movement. You got free love. The country's going, you know, everything's going really well. We landed on the moon. Then what happens? 2 weeks after the moon landing, an idiot named Charles Manson goes and kills multiple people in the LA area and completely brings a traumatic and horrific end to the 1960s, leading us into the weird 1970s. Well, I got a solution, guys. We got to stop Charles Manson. And I got a perfect foolproof solution, and I'm going to bite off your style a little bit here, Ben, but I think you can do this. There's a moment. Charles Manson spent, I think, like 70 of his 75 years in some state-sponsored institution, except for a brief moment in March 21st of 1967, where he's paroled, let out onto the streets. He was tied into the LSD movement. I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but he was kind of protected as they experimented with LSD in this whole time period. And that's the moment where he starts getting weird followers and, you know, puts his plan into action. What if you could work your way onto that parole board? You keep him in jail in 1967. He doesn't get out, does not commit the murders, and all of a sudden, the shirts that I wear from the 1970s are still popular today. I think it completely alters the face of the 70s and reality. I think that's pretty good. I don't know if it's quite as good as yours, Ben, but I think this could have an equal amount of impact on our society and culture.
It potentially could. You know, you gotta... stopping any serial killer is probably a good choice. You know, you could maybe do the same with the Unabomber or something. You know, there's a lot of ways to potentially save, you know, a small amount of people from these horrible situations.
Yeah, you know, Dan, again, just as with Ben, I liked the solution. I had an alternate. I didn't, you know okay. where you were going with this. You know, on the parole board, you are only one vote. I don't know how many people are on a parole board. I'm not experienced with that.
I don't know anything about it.
I thought you were going with I'd get myself arrested and be in the same prison with him and make sure he did something to not get parole. All right. I thought you were going to play that card, kind of like the great movie Face Off, where you know, they take their faces off, and I always forget which one's the bad guy at the beginning. Why am I drawing a total blank?
John Travolta's the bad guy.
Right. And Nick Cage goes into prison pretending to be the bad guy to get some informant to inform, right?
Yes.
Right. So clearly it's been in a movie, Dan. So and that movie worked out really well.
Yeah.
I think the beauty in Ben's solution is in its simplicity.
Right.
Right. Removing your face and replacing it with another face in the 60s. I don't know if it's as foolproof as getting on the election board.
You don't need to do that. You just need to get arrested and somehow on the same cell block as Manson.
Oh, yeah, Dan. Yeah. This was a much simpler. Yeah. I was just using that as an example. You don't need to go the whole face thing. You just need to get arrested and be in prison with him. That's all.
Well, I was thinking more of the prison break idea where you already have your escape plan. You know, you get put into prison with the idea of getting out.
Right,
And I'm failing to see how getting myself arrested doesn't end up with me staying in prison. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, you hop into the 50s, you stop the JFK assassination, you hop back.
Right? That is why
you
I
hop
was
into
saying.
The 60s, meet Charles Manson, get him, keep him in prison where he's going to get you, and then live your life out in prison.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely saying, Dan, your plan was better. I was just saying, surprised that you didn't go with my plan.
Me too. I'm very surprised. Yeah.
I mean, the other option is, you know, LA is the king of traffic violence. You could also just figure out where he lives and hit him with a car.
I could, but that implies that I have to be a murderer. So getting on the parole board and convincing a couple of people to vote against him. I don't know if he had the swastika on his forehead at this point, which makes my argument much easier. Or I could become a murderer or a convicted felon for the rest of my life. These are, let me think, I'm going to think about this as I put my plan together. Thank you very much. We'll spitball later on.
A car crash in L.A. You're not getting arrested.
By the mental state of me murdering somebody unknowingly.
Dan, you don't want to be a murderer. But see, I can solve all of your gentlemen's problems.
Okay.
Because really, as a student of history and as an expert, all I have to do is go back far enough and stop the aliens from building the pyramids. And everything in history after that is fixed, Dan.
Well, except you don't end up on Ancient Aliens, and you may not be on this show, then. And there are consequences to all of these actions in the past.
Oh, no, but I still end up on the Science of Superheroes. And that's really how I got on this show with you, Dan.
Well, no, that's Dan, true. The lack of pyramids are proof that we need the aliens' help to build the pyramids.
That is, and I'm sure they would have built something else, right? If you're not going to build the pyramids, they got to build something.
Yeah,
if I understand aliens correctly.
I mean, Denon would be on Ancient Aliens explaining how, look how crappy the monuments in Egypt are. Clearly, if aliens didn't help them, and if they had, their monuments would be way better.
Right. It's true. We don't know how our actions in the past will affect the future, though. So let's be very careful, because one of the things here, right, and we're just playing willy-nilly with your career here, Denon. One of the things we learn, and probably the most unique and my favorite quality of this movie / TV series, is the fact that the past, when you mess around with it, it messes with you. You know, as a matter of fact, one of the great quotes, I think, you know, I'm going to keep my language here PG, is, you know, if you do something that really oomps with the past oomps with you, right? Complete, you know, insert F word there. This is something that I think is very true. The past doesn't like to be changed. And there are some events which are a little bit of a struggle to change, and there are other ones that are much more difficult to change, which would imply that certain events hold more weight in keeping the timeline tied together. This, I thought, you know, was very interesting. You know, Jake tries a couple things, and the past pushes back violently in some ways. You know, first it growls, it barks, and then it bites. And I think this is a very interesting property, Denon.
Oh, I really do too. I love this idea in the movie. I think it's very unique to this movie. It feels very real. We know space and time are different. Time always keeps moving forward. So it has some resistance, permanence to it, some feel to it that maybe space doesn't have as a dimension. I mean, the picture I love is a river and the events being various sized rocks in it. And that kind of gives you the feel of which are kind of movable, which can go, and which are just sitting there and not moving. So that's kind of my starting point when I think of this effect. And I really do like that resistance.
Now, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but in my mind, I kind of picture it as these big events have more gravity and are in the timeline with their gravity, and therefore pulling out of those gravitational dips is very difficult. And we're stuck in this flow because of these major events as, you know, markings along the timeline.
Oh, I love that image too, Ben. I mean, I think there's lots of ways to come at that and to kind of give that sense of where this resistance is coming from. And I think they work together as metaphors and analogies to help our viewers really picture this in the best way possible.
Yeah, because I think of Jake as he's an agent of change. I mentioned this earlier. You know, everything around him is changing. He's almost like a mini black hole altering the events around him, right? You know, but instead of gravity, you know, it's changeity. It's the ability to change what's around you. And Denon, I'm going to steal a little page out of your book here, if you don't mind.
Oh, not at all.
You become the master of film and television. I've suddenly become a physics phenom. I don't know what's going on in this particular quantum future. But I'm going to suggest a particle here. I'm going to call it the change-on. The change in time's flow that's acceleration. If these accumulate in large enough numbers and big events, anchor point events like the Kennedy assassination, like 9/11, I think the force to change, move those around, as Ben's pointing out, it's akin to gravitation. It's akin to fighting against large chunks of gravity. And we all know, even with our intelligence, we put it together, I don't think there's much we can do about moving a black hole around. It's kind of stuck where it is, Denon. We're not moving it.
I think you're so right, Dan. I mean, it just goes to show how amazing this show is. I don't know how many new particles we've discovered in our career. We probably have a record. but I do love the change on because it actually helps people understand. I mean, you got space, you got time. We know from general relativity, bending space-time is gravity. But we also know time is different than space in some ways. The technical feature is you have a square root of minus one, the imaginary number involved. People can go look that up. But it would make sense to have gravitons for the space component of this and change-ons for the time component of this and have them interact in interesting ways. And then you could really start to understand, you know, things like cars mysteriously running through phone booths. Like you could make predictions on that and when that's going to happen.
Because I think this is very interesting because the thing here is that this is really creating the illusion of sentience on time's part. It appears if you look back and you see all these events that happen, it's like time has an agenda. You know, Jake goes and tries to contact his father, and at first the phone is kind of static and he can't quite hear him, and he walks away. And when he goes back to make another phone call, all of a sudden a car comes by and smashes that phone booth, right? That's time sending a message, or that's the illusion of time sending a message that, hey, stop using the phone. Or you'll be next, right? Don't change me is what it's trying to say. Yeah. But this is, you know, obviously time isn't thinking. It's not like that. But this is similar to evolution. We sometimes give these human characteristics to these forces. And we can say, you know, it looks like there's a guiding hand in the way things evolve. And really, every animal is just a little different than the animal before. And it's the slow process of adapting to your environment, which when taken in the full context of millions of years, looks like there's a guiding force, but in fact, there may not be, and that is very true of time in this particular story, I believe.
I think it is, and I think your change on helps explain that, Dan. If you take the phone booth issue, right, initially he's just starting to try and change, and that's generating a small number of change ons, which interferes with the phone. As he tries to change more, he's generating more change ons. Those attract something bigger, in this case, the car. Right. We see the same thing later on when there's a small fire in the restaurant that tries to stop him to go down the stairs. Then there's a bigger fire in the restaurant. Then there's an entire building that burns. Right. The change-ons, you know, multiply and build on each other. And it's an additive effect, which, to your point, can look like something being planned when it really is just the forces of nature at work.
Yeah. I do have to wonder if it's kind of the reverse of that, where is he drawn? Do the change-ons draw him to disasters that happened anyways? Like, does that car always hit that phone booth and the particles drew him to use a phone booth that's about to get crashed into?
That is, I didn't think about that. That's super interesting. It's same thing could be said for, you know, one of my favorite moments in the book, you know, one that's like these flashbulb moments for me is that at the end, when he's, you know, it's the day of the shooting of the Kennedy, for Oswald's in position, and he's racing to stop him. He's racing to the book depository to stop Oswald from the assassination. Everything, you know, he's in his car. All of a sudden, the car dies. You know, the engine just stops. He gets into a bus. The bus has a flat tire. You know, so he gets out of the bus and he's running towards the book depository. And all of a sudden there's a crash and he can't get through. And there's people on the sidewalk and someone, you know, it's like a comedy where you got two people doing a painted glass across the sidewalk, right? Like everything is in his way. And it's just this very interesting moment where, you know, is he just pulling all of these things in like a gigantic, you know, black hole at Chajan, you know, which is how we're going to pronounce it now. It's a Chajan. it's a question. question, and but clearly these things are going on, and my favorite part of the movie for sure.
Well, it shows, Dan and Ben, a fundamental thing about physics with forces. Everything is an equal and opposite reaction. That's Newton's third law. I mean, we'd like to say, oh, you know, the Earth is pulling us down with gravity, and that's why we stay on the surface, when we all really know what we're doing is pulling the Earth up so that the Earth stays stuck to our feet.
Yeah, right? We all know that. Exactly.
You can look at it from either perspective, right? And so I think, you know, these are just a frame of reference situation here, right? Either he is being attracted to the disasters or he's attracting the disasters. It's actually both, right? Everything is always an equal and opposite reaction. So I'm glad you pointed that out, Ben, or our viewers might be, you know, concerned that Newton's third law was being violated. And we avoided that whole comment, you know, situation.
Thank God.
Absolutely.
Thank
God. I mean, it also, though, goes to show the hubris of time travelers. Like, why didn't he get there hours early? Why didn't he, like, you know, sleep, spend the night in the building next door, you know? What is up with these time travelers, like, thinking everything's going to go perfectly on the critical day, you know?
It's perfect. Well, and I will close with one of my favorite examples, Ben. Excellent transition, by the way. Is that, you know, Back to the Future. You know, there's this great moment at the end of the film where Marty's going back to, he's in 1955, he's going to go back to 1985, he's getting ready to get struck by lightning, and he's remembering that Doc gets shot when he goes back in 1985. He wants to stop this event, and it's been foiled. He's like, if only I had more time. And then he has that moment where he's like, what? I'm in a time machine. Of course I've got more time, right? And it's that moment we all have where the answer's right in front of you. And then when you see it, you feel like an absolute idiot. So then he punches and he's like, I'll just go back early. Easy. Problem solved. Just like you said, Ben. Why didn't you go back early? Because you can go solve the problem. Goes back 10 minutes early. And what happens? The car dies. He's, you know, the courthouse is, you know, miles away from the mall where all this event happens. He's got to run there. Again, similar situation where time seems to have foiled him. That he can't get there. So you can go back early, Ben. The best laid plans, you know, to throw another cliche out here. I think I'm at a record. I think are foiled. You know, when man makes plans, God laughs type of stuff.
There's a again, though, why did he choose 10 minutes? Why not an hour? Why not 2 hours? Why not 6 hours?
He was panicked.
You didn't want to make sure he saw himself either, I think, is part of it.
Whatever.
All right, now that I've broken Ben here, so this is the best place. Once you break Ben, you know, I think we've got to. That is an error. You know, he's clearly erring out here. This is our errors, additions, and omissions section. Things we wanted to talk about, but didn't quite get to. Denon, is there anything about time travel, the elements of change, 9/11, Charles Manson that you wanted to talk about before we end here?
Well, two quick ones, or one quick, maybe one long. We'll see how I feel. The quick one is clearly the reset feature of the cabinet means that this was engineered and designed. I feel like all engineers put a reset button in. The other day, my Zoom function went really bad, and I had to just reboot my computer. I have no idea why it was bad, and I have no idea why it works. But the reset button clearly is good. I actually lied. I have three things. Stephen King obviously made a nod to Narnia by having it be a closet, which is basically a wardrobe that you go through. That was kind of cool. I like that. And the third one, Dan, I hate to do this, but it is a day for things going weird, time fighting back, things stranging. This is supposedly my errors and additions. I think it's a joint error, Dan. It's an error on your part and my part that when talking about technology of the 50s, neither of us made a reference to Marty correctly putting on his Walkman headset, wearing the radiation suit, and convincing his dad he was an alien. That is one of the best uses of tools from the future to convince yourself, you know, convince That's somebody good. Else that something's going on. We both missed that. That's a joint error. That reference should have happened.
And Van Halen from the 50s definitely sounds like alien music. For sure. What about you, Ben? Anything you wanted to talk about?
Just to follow up real quick on the Marty thing, I think he could figure out a way to stay hidden for 6 hours. It's a mall. There's a place to hide. But the other thing is, I was thinking also about like going back and stopping engineering disasters. Like, could you stop one of the shuttle failures, or maybe prevent the Kansas City Skywalk disaster?
But or Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, right? A million. There's a million things here. But it got me thinking about the whole adage of, you know, regulations are written in blood, And if you stop, this is like one of these gravity things that we've talked about where if you stop one engineering disaster, it's just going to happen again because the lessons weren't learned from the disaster.
Oh, my God. Oh, there's some truth in that.
Like, if the Challenger didn't blow up, one of the other shuttles would blow up later because they didn't learn their lesson.
Maybe. We don't know. It's not a guarantee.
I think so.
I like how dark we've gotten in our errors and additions.
Yeah, I think there are some people who would say, you know, let's take that chance. I'd rather my family didn't die in a fireball explosion for all the nation to see. And let's just see if another one goes. We don't know. Maybe it won't be any people on it. I'm just speculating here. But it's a good thought. I've got one a little more light, and it's going to be a little bit of a promotion. So in the TV show version of 11-22-63, Jake goes and he's teaching English class, and the first thing that he quotes is Edgar Allan Poe. I just did a whole episode on Edgar Allan Poe. As a matter of fact, I told a story about how I went through school and did not learn. We did not do The Raven or The Telltale Heart, which I thought was very weird, despite the fact that I actually love his writings. So that's what I'm going to do here. But of course, if you want to talk about anything else, any tragic events that you would like, well, if there's any tragic events you'd like Ben's take on, please let us know. Actually, let him know. We'll get to his part in a second. Any non-tragic events you want us to talk about, you can get in touch with us. Social media is the best place. We are on X, formerly Twitter, at FGBTPod. We are on Facebook, at FGBT. Website, FGBT.com. And if you want to send us a question, a non-Ben-related question, do that at questions@FGBT.com. But if you want to get in touch with us individually, here's the place to do it. Denon, how can people find you?
Well, they can find me on most social media by flipping my name. That's at Denon Michael. You can find me on YouTube, though. Keep my name the same. That's Michael Denon. I've got a website, denonmichael.com. And of course, there's always the, you know, hardcore, time-resistant Facebook. And there you just stick a prof in, and that's at Prof Denon Michael. The name is still flipped because that seems to not resist change.
Doesn't resist change, doesn't resist controversy. It is a stalwart of our future. You try getting rid of Facebook in 2001 and see what happens to you. It's gonna be dangerous. What about you, Ben? Where can people find you?
People can find me on all the major social media networks at B Siepser.
How do you spell that?
Spell that B-S-I-E-P-S-E-R.
And I will just tell you, Ben, I am thankful that you have not changed that at all. And it's not as complicated as Denon and I, because you can find me on X, formerly Twitter, at Daniel J. Glenn, on Instagram, at the Daniel J. Glenn, on Facebook, at Analytical Mastermind. And I have a website, danieljglenn.com.
And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe, and ring that bell so you never miss an episode.
And finally, this show contains powerful information that could be misused by those hell-bent on world domination. So you want to take this information and do good with it. Remember, you won't always have a time slip that you can go in and out of to reset everything. So your choices matter. When given that choice, you want to be a superhero, never a supervillain. So until next time, thank you for listening. Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies is a Glencoe production and is produced by me, Daniel J. Glenn. The Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies introduction was produced by Daniel J. Glenn and Paul Springers, with music and sound design written and performed by Paul Springers. Now, of course, if you're listening to this episode and you've gotten this far, you're going to want to subscribe. Well, how do you do that? We're on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. But if you're not already subscribed to those platforms, I made it easy for you. Go to our website, fggbt.com. You'll find links to those subscribe buttons and also links to our social media, both for the show and for our individual experts, the members of the Brain Trust. That's all right there. fggbt.com. And before you leave, don't forget to check out our other episodes. You can find the link at the top of the page for everything we've got, and you'll notice that we've got both a YouTube version and an audio-only version. Depending on what you like, we got it for you. And if you do like those videos, you can go ahead and subscribe to those as well. We're on youtube.com/Daniel J. Glenn. And once again, if you like this show, you're going to like everything that I do. Go to danieljglenn.com to find out more. Thank you for listening.